Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio, your spot in the corner office, the radio show where executives share their secrets to success. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Ethan Milrod, LiveTech, Ryan Walter, Pro CFO Partners, Chris Keith, Epic Brokers, and Jane Sobieski, Wells Fargo. Ethan, could you give me a rundown on who we have on the show today, please?
Sure, Herb. We have a great show today, including Natalie Kidd, Chair of BOMA, Rebecca Johnson, Executive Director of AIA Philadelphia, Adrian Strassione, Partner of Welch, Maloney & Company, and Maria McConnell, Chair, Corporate Business Banking Group, Fitzpatrick, Lentz & Buba.
Gotcha. Let's get to know Natalie Kidd, Chair of BOMA first. Natalie, what is BOMA? What are you guys doing?
So BOMA Philadelphia is the local chapter of BOMA International, which stands for Building Owners and Managers Association, and that's the leading trade group for the commercial real estate industry.
Gotcha. Where are you from? How many brothers and sisters, and where are you in the pecking order?
So I am the oldest of two. I have a younger brother, and I grew up in a small town called Concord, North Carolina, which you probably haven't heard of unless you live in Charlotte or are a NASCAR fan.
Gotcha. Where are you from? And give me a list of 8 to 14. What kind of stuff were you doing 8 to 14?
So I started taking dance lessons at 3, so I was on stage.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned it was a rural town. You guys were running around and you were doing dance lessons. You were involved with local community theater, if I remember correctly, as well. And you told us that also in the green room that you loved English. Ethan, you want to give me a hand getting to know Natalie, please?
Sure. Natalie, can you recall your first experience being an organizer when you were younger? You know, where did that come from, and how does that show up for you today?
So whether it was riding bikes after school and getting the kid, you know, all the kids together and, you know, setting our circuit or being on the stage, I was observing people that I admired and trying to emulate them in my own interactions with my peers.
And how does that show up for you in your role today at BOMA?
Well, I'm in a very much in the same position where I am responsible for getting a disparate group of people, often with different or even competing priorities, focused on a goal, whether it's advocacy, setting standards, or addressing crisis that relates to our industry.
You really are a natural organizer. Jane, you want to give me a hand with Natalie?
Natalie, you said in the green room, we talked a little bit about your mother and dad and what they brought to what you do today and the influence they had on your life. Share with us a little bit of what they were able to impact on your life.
Sure. So my mom was in international insurance, and so she dealt with people all over the world, and that required a sense of empathy, understanding who she was dealing with and trying to understand their culture, because that changed how she would approach them in a business setting. My father was a prosthetist orthotist, which means his patients were people who had lost limbs or needed aids for injury. And so every patient of his had gone through probably the worst thing in their life, and he was there to make their lives better, to make sure that they could live fully. And I try to emulate that myself.
Interesting. Ryan.
Well, I know you mentioned a love of reading. So what effect does that have on what you do today?
Well, I loved reading as a kid. I carry that with me through my career. What it did for me initially was sort of opened up worlds that I didn't have access to. What it does for me today is it continues to allow me to self-educate, whether that's reading a trade journal or a, you know, nonfiction book. All of that sort of just continues to feed me intellectually.
Mm-hmm. Chris?
In the green room, you mentioned as a kid you did a lot in theater and you were the organizer on the stage with the various personalities and roles on the stage. How do you feel like that role that you had as a child translates into your role today at BOMA?
Well, I think anyone who's in leadership understands that what gets presented to the public is the end result of a very long process. In the theater, that's rehearsal, that's getting to know each other, that's following a director's vision and bringing your own interpretation to it. In my role as BOMA chair, as I mentioned, I have constituents who may be at times in competition with each other. So my responsibility is to make sure that we're all sort of moving in the same direction in a way that supports our industry and each other in business.
Natalie, this BOMA, Building Owners Management Association, is a nonprofit, you're the executive director and you're a volunteer. This is not your
Correct.
full-time gig. Where in the green room, you were telling us it takes you 10 to 20 hours a week for you to do it. Why are you volunteering your time? Why are you doing this? Why are you spending 10 or 20 hours a week without getting paid?
Because I believe in the mission. The group itself has been beneficial to me in my career. It's given me a network of peers and service providers that I would not necessarily have had access to. And honestly, it's gotten me jobs as I've moved through my career. So I just feel like it's important to give back. And as a nonprofit organization, all of us who are involved, we are volunteers. It's a committee-driven organization, but we have very clear advocacy, education, and we are supporting the next generation of leaders in the commercial real estate industry.
It sounds like you're hanging out with all the other theater kids all over again. It sounds like you got a group of buddies. Am I seeing a parallel there, or does that make any sense?
Well, I'll tell you that my career in the my early experience in theater, it taught me how to improvise, and that's a really important skill in what I do. And I play to different audiences. I have different constituencies I serve, both in my day job and as chair of BOMA. And being able to read the room is an incredibly important skill.
It also sounds to me like you really enjoy, as opposed to sitting home and watching TV alone, you really enjoy being involved. It's not even networking to you. It's just being involved with other people on an ongoing basis and accomplishing stuff together. It just feels like that's like who you are. Am I reading that right? Or what are you thinking?
Thank you. I would like to think that you're reading that correctly. Yes. Involvement is critical to me.
What do you mean involvement is critical to you? What are you talking about?
I want to be part of the conversation. I want to lead or follow or, contribute in any way that I am capable. A lot of what BOMA does is community-based, and so we want to be members of our community. That includes volunteering. We have several charitable organizations we participate with, partner with, including the Police Athletic League, which is really important to me. Being involved is much more important to me than sitting by the sidelines and waiting for somebody else to tell me what's happening or what needs to be done. That being said, I don't have any problem following if I'm following someone whose mission I truly believe in.
Gotcha. And what's your full-time gig? What do you do for full-time?
I am the general manager of a very large building in Center City, Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. What's special about this building?
It is the most densely connected building in terms of cable and fiber between Northern Virginia and New York City. 95% of the internet traffic in this region comes through this building.
And you're the manager of the building.
I'm the general manager, yes.
So you like responsibility, you like being in the middle of everything, it sounds like, not just with BOMA, but also with your full-time gig. You like responsibility, being in the middle of it all, making sure everything's coordinated and organized.
I do, and I really enjoy working with a team. I am so privileged to have smart people around me whose skills complement my own and make up for my own deficits. I think that's really important in leadership, is understanding what you bring to the table and what you're missing and figuring out how do you fill in the holes.
How young were you when you were picking and choosing your teammates? And give me an example. How young were you when you were picking and choosing your teammates? And give me an example.
I was from the moment I can remember. I mean, I was always looking for those in my peer group when I was a child, those kids who understood my sense of humor, wanted to do the things I wanted to do, and would follow if I wanted to lead and lead if I wanted to follow.
So it sounds to me like it just so happens you're in the real estate industry, but your natural strength is getting involved with pulling a team together and then playing a variety of different roles on that team. Sometimes you're out front, sometimes you're in the middle, sometimes you're in the back. You know, you just like being involved with everybody. And it sounds like that was showing up very early in the game. You know, it just so happened that it was showing up with theater. And it sounds like the reading stuff really just helped expose you to other parts of the world that you would have never seen before.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think one of my skills as a leader is that I try not to let my ego drive my intention. And in that, I mean, and we've said it several times, sometimes that means I need to step up and lead. I need to be the decision maker. I need to be the one setting direction. Sometimes it means that instead of pushing an agenda, I'm pulling it from other people. And sometimes that means that I step back and let someone else take the lead and encourage them to do so. There's a flexibility in that that I'm quite proud of. It can sometimes be to my detriment, where I may find myself in a position where I'm questioning my own decision making. I'm questioning whether the steps I've chosen to take are the right ones. But at the end of the day, I think what's most important is to understand you don't have to have all the answers. You just have to know what questions to ask and have a little bit of faith that you understand what it is that you're trying to do.
You're a great teammate. What's the website address for this BOMA thing?
It's bomaphila.com.
BOMAPHILA.com. We've been speaking with Natalie Kidd, who's chair of BOMA, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this quick break. Don't go anywhere.
This is Herb Cohen, your host at executiveleadersradio.com. Regarding your career, if you're trying to figure out how to make the most money and also enjoy your career, that's enjoy your career, I mean really enjoy your career and make the most money, you ought to talk to our CEOs. They've got the bird's eye view of where the really profitable jobs are, where the really profitable jobs are going to be. And they're willing to speak with you regarding their vision for the future and where you may fit into it in order to make the most money and really enjoy your career. Email us, consult@executiveleadersradio.com. That's consult@executiveleadersradio.com to get help from our CEOs regarding where you may want to go in your career to make the most money and really enjoy your career. Consult@executiveleadersradio.com.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, and let's get to know Rebecca Johnson, who happens to be the executive director of AIA Philadelphia. Rebecca, what is AIA Philadelphia? What are you guys doing?
It is a professional association of about 1,800 architects in the Philly region. And we really focus on advancing the profession, leading on climate-related issues related to the built environment, and prioritizing equity and justice in industry.
Got you. Where are you from? How many brothers and sisters? And where are you in the pecking order?
I grew up in the Lehigh Valley, outside of Allentown. I am the oldest. And I have two younger brothers.
All righty. And 8 to 14, what's that list look like?
Swimming, student council, softball, art class.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that your dad was your coach in softball.
Yeah.
What did that do to you, the fact that your dad was your coach in softball?
Well, it was a great way to spend time with my dad. But besides that, he just really set clear expectations for what I was supposed to do and what everyone else was supposed to do as a coach. But he was the sort of strong, silent type and was encouraging without micromanaging us. And I think it was a lesson for me, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Jeffrey's going to cover more of that in the near future. Anna, why don't you give me a hand with Rebecca?
Most definitely. Rebecca, you were the oldest child, but you had two younger brothers. Now, how does that influence your leadership style?
Yeah, I think I learned early on that you can't force people to do things they don't want to do. I was the oldest and I had two younger brothers who had absolutely no qualms of asking for what they wanted and when they wanted it and how they wanted it. And I think now as a leader, I'm very clear and patient and expect people to get to the goal in their own way. And I think that's one of the things I love most about my job, right? Is that I get to support people on their growth. That as long as it's clear about what they need to accomplish, how they get there is, and then works best for them is good for me. It's good for the team.
Anna, do you have another question?
Yeah. So that seems like a really great part of your job. Is that your favorite part of your job, or, you know, is there more to that?
It is, you know, I think that I don't want, nobody wants to go to work with people that they don't like. And the key to being in a working environment and enjoying yourself is that people are happy. And if you're supporting your team and leveraging their talents and their skills, they feel good about themselves, they feel good about working with one another. And it's just overall like a positive experience. And so for me, the fact that I think most of my team members, and we work on this, like, as a team, monthly, weekly, you know, that we are communicating and we're not letting things fester, you know, like when things are hard, we deal with them. And as a result, people, I think, you know, my team trust me that like this is a place that they can grow and they have value. Everyone is like really valuable member of our team.
Jeffrey?
Yeah, Rebecca, I want to go back to your dad being your coach again. You said that he put you at shortstop, he put you at second base, he put you in these areas where you had covered a lot of ground, pushed you outside your comfort zone. Does that influence you now? Do you push people outside their comfort zone so they can grow?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the key was is that I knew what the goal was in my role, whether it was on second base or shortstop, and that I had to learn how to get better at that. I wasn't innately good at that. I wasn't just like a rock star softball player at, you know, nine. But I think that in my role now, it's as long as the goal is really clearly defined for folks, we can work with them if they're struggling on how to get to that goal, and also pivot if we need to pivot and make some adjustments. And so, for me, that sort of, again, that strong, silent, he wasn't really that silent. He's a coach, you know, but he wasn't a nag, right? He was like, this is what's expected of you. You're doing great. Let's work on that. It was very clear. And I try to emulate that with my team.
Joseph?
So we talked a lot about dad, but what about mom? How does mom fit in and how does that influence you and what you do today?
Yeah. So my mom is, we're so similar. It's crazy. You know, never had a fear of talking in front of people. My mom is a principal, a counselor, always a leader, always standing in front of a classroom. She's a teacher, all that stuff. But also, my mom was, you know, I used to say like a recovering hippie. And so, deeply in, you know, faith-based, but also deeply social justice-based. And so, my kind of my faith and kind of what I do today is sort of grounded in mom's vision of the world. And she was just a huge influence on me in that way.
Eileen?
I love that you focused on that your mom introduced you to faith. How does that foundation influence who you are today? And what does faith mean to you now?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that if I look back at my career in as a lawyer or, you know, nonprofit executive, I really do feel like faith is about doing for other people and believing in people. And in order to serve other people and try to make the world a better place, you have to believe inherently that people are good and that you can have hope and in change and social justice. And so for me, that's what faith is. It's believing that people are inherently good and that we can solve hard things together. So that's for me, that's what my faith is about.
Jeffrey?
Rebecca, you mentioned your best friend's name is Carissa. What would she tell us that we're missing about you?
I think that she would just, you know, it has been, I have been, okay. She would say that I'm someone who really, social justice and equity is something that I've been like, has been my banner since like college. It's been something that I protested, I would fight for things, I would fight on behalf of other folks, for myself, for my rights. And I think that it's such a through line, whether it was sociology or architecture or law or now in nonprofit community development, now in association world, whatever I've been doing, that's really the through line. You know, to the point where like sometimes you'd be like, okay, relax, we're on vacation, let's just like have a glass of wine and look at the beach and not talk about what's wrong with the world. So that's what I think she would say.
You're originally from the Allentown area, which is a suburb of Philadelphia. How's that affecting you nowadays, growing up in Allentown?
I think that I grew up in a predominantly white kind of rural suburban school district, but I had so much economic diversity in my classroom. So I knew people that were really, really wealthy and had lots of friends who lived in like mobile home park, right? And so I think that I didn't have, which I tend to my friends who grew up in the closer suburbs of Philadelphia, I had a lot of like diversity, not racially at all, but from faith. Like I had a lot of different folks that were different faiths, different economics. There was less homogenousness. I mean, we kind of joke about the Jersey Shore, like this is where all the Jews go. This is where the Catholics go. This is where the more densely populated around neighborhoods, the more people tend to like segregate into communities, whether it's social networks or whatever. And in the Lehigh Valley, you had farmers, you had doctors, it was just such a large geographic area that like I saw difference and inequality at a very early age. And thankfully my parents had like the tools to talk to me about what that meant, because we were like kind of right in the middle. I like had friends I couldn't like I was like, I want what they have. I'm like, well, we don't have that. You know what I mean? But also you're blessed to have.
So what's all this have to do with architecture?
I mean, I'm the biggest cheerleader for my members because they literally shape the world around us, you know? And they don't go to school to make a lot of money, although we're working on that. We're working on that for them. But they go to school and they want to solve problems. So there's this intersection of community and construction, quite frankly. Like, what does the community need? You know, how are we going to build in a way that it lasts? You know, and they don't get to make all those decisions as the designer. But I'm just so kind of proud of like the things that our members have advocated for, City Hall and Harrisburg, around like climate change is real. We need to be like advancing our building standards, which is hard for a whole industry to adjust, but it's all going to better all of us if we have more flood resistance, more heat resistance, all that kind of stuff. And so they're just really wonderful people who care very much about their designs, but also the community.
Yeah, it sounds to me like you're right in the middle of the community. Architecture, the design happens to be affecting everything. You really enjoy the role you're playing. Website address for AIA Philadelphia?
AIAPhiladelphia.org.
We've been speaking with Rebecca Johnson, Executive Director of AIA Philadelphia, here on Executive Leaders Radio. So we'll be back in a moment right after this quick break. Don't go anywhere. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. And let's get to know Adrian Strassione, who's a partner at Welch Maloney. What is Welch Maloney? What are you guys doing, Adrian?
We are a CPA and business advisory firm.
Mm-hmm. Where you're from? How many brothers and sisters? Where are you in the pecking order?
I'm from Pottstown, Pennsylvania, which is a suburb outside of Philadelphia. I have two sisters and I am the baby of the family.
Uh-huh. 8 to 14. What were you doing 8 to 14 years old?
I was a point guard in basketball. And over the summer, I would spend time with my grandparents and I would create a makeshift grocery store in their living room where I had fake money. I would set up a conveyor belt and I would pretend I had customers who would come in and buy things and just love doing the exchange of money with them.
Mm-hmm. How young were you when you started making money?
I was started working as young as I could, which was age of 15. I was working in a deli at the time.
Mm-hmm. Okie dokie. Jane, you want to give me a hand getting to know Adrian, please?
Certainly. What do you bring to what you do today from what you learned from your mom and your dad?
So my father was in Vietnam and had a lot of mental health issues related to that. And so my mom was the one who was doing a lot of things for me when I was younger, kind of being the co-parent, or I should say the double parent, if you will. And so she was always organized, always had to make sure that I was at places on time, whether that meant rearranging her work schedule or asking for help. So learned, I guess, leadership and also how to be independent from her. And then on the other side, my dad, I had a lot of compassion for him because of what he was going through. And one of the most important parts about my job is helping people. I do love the numbers part of it, but I absolutely love helping people. And I think just, dealing with a father who had the issues he had just helped me be compassionate towards my clients.
Gotcha. Ryan?
Adrian, point guards run the floor in basketball. How has that influenced who you are today?
I think it's being a leader, helping me be a leader and learn how to be a leader in my role. We have two offices in our firm, and I run one of the offices in Philadelphia. I also am, I guess, the leader, if you will, of our partner group. So we meet once a month, and I'm always making sure that the meetings are set, that everyone's on time, that we have lunch ordered, that, you know, whatever needs to be done for those meetings is, you know, just one example of the leadership role that I take in my firm.
Mm-hmm. Ethan?
Adrian, I want to go back to your time at working at the deli when you were 15 years old. You shared with us in the green room that you really impressed the deli owner there. Can you tell our listening audience what he said about you? What was special about you, and how does that show up for you in your role today?
Sure. I guess it was about 6 months into that role, and the owner had said to me, "You are the only employee that we've had that is a high school student that has showed up every day, whether it's on time or early, stay late, always offering to help and, you know, do things above and beyond what just your immediate role was." And that's exactly what I do today. You know, a client may call for one situation, which turns into a couple other situations. So always just trying to figure out how to help people. And, you know, whether that's taking it to the next level or whatever it may be, but just always being a leader and, you know, showing compassion at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Chris? Yep. You have to mute there, Chris. Here we go. Mm-hmm.
Hi. You mentioned as a child, your father was a Vietnam vet and experienced some fairly significant mental health issues. You know, how did that impact you as a child, and how do you bring that into your professional life today?
So I guess navigating not having him around all of the time was, you know, a challenge at times, and it helped me figure out how to adapt in situations that maybe I wasn't used to. And also, like I mentioned, having compassion. You know, mm-hmm. having compassion towards him turned into having compassion towards clients. And like I mentioned, I love to help people. It's the most rewarding part of my job. There's nothing better than a client calling and saying, "Thank you. You don't know how much that helped me or changed the situation," or whatever it may be. But I think it's just the compassion part for him is what I've taken into my career.
Mm-hmm. Jane?
You have two older sisters that you've kind of rose to leadership. How does that work out?
Yeah.
So my sisters were pretty much out of the house, whether they were in high school or college, when I was growing up. But me and my mom were probably, I guess you could maybe consider sisters in the relationship that we had, where we were always doing things together. It was, you know, two peas in a pod. And so seeing her and how she sort of overcome the struggles that she dealt with my dad, and how to be, you know, the double parent in the house, I think helped me in who I am and how to grow and be independent and just be a strong leader.
Ryan?
You know, Adrian, you are a super mom. We also think through the fact that, like you said, your siblings were out, you and your mom kind of independent together. How has that influenced you as a super mom, and how is that impacting your world today?
So it's, you know, I have an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old, and they've taught me, I guess, two things. One, which is patience, which I think most kids will teach you patience, but also teach you that life is too short, and sometimes you need to put your kids first over work. Look, I love what I do. I put a lot of hours in, but sometimes there's nothing more important than just going home at the end of the day and spending time with your kids and putting work aside and realizing that it'll still be there tomorrow, but your kids and their experiences and what they go through and, you know, the sports and everything just, you know, are so important sometimes over a career.
Ethan?
Tell us a little bit more about being a super mom and how that shows up in your role today in business.
I think it's sort of like my mom, which is juggling the schedule. I work 70 hours a week, January through April, with this job, and, you know, figuring out how to work and then go home and do dinner and homework and sports. And, you know, you just sort of figure it out, sort of a super mom, like Superman, you know, you just sort of figure it out. And that's kind of what I've done. I've just figured it out. And again, it all works out somehow, some way.
Mm-hmm. And give me again, what have you learned from your kids that's had an effect, a positive effect on your professional career?
I think it's patience, and patience in the sense that sometimes you deal with clients or you may have to give, you know, maybe not the best of news to clients or something like that. So it's learning how to have patience and explain things in a situation to a client, same things you do with the same way you would with your kid, in a understandable format, in a compassionate format, in a way that isn't going to be upsetting. And I think mm-hmm. that resonates with both how you, you know, maybe discipline your kids or, you know, correct your kids or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with the client as well. You don't want to upset them, but mm-hmm. you have to give the news one way or the other.
You mentioned that when you were hanging out with your grandparents as a kid during the summer, that you invented a makeshift grocery store. What was that all about? And what's that have to do with who you is now?
I think it was just my love of money and math and numbers and, you know, adding things up and problem solving as well. You know, if I take this and this, how much does that add up to? I guess just going back to one thing about my father used to work for Sears and he was in electronics. So things often were broken and he was fixing things in electronics. And so I very much have those traits similar to what I would do at the grocery store, which is problem solving. And that's a lot of what I do in my career is how do I figure out problems? How do I figure out complex situations? And the grocery store, kind of the same thing. How do I do something with myself and occupy my time and not just watch TV or, you know, not play video games or whatever it is. It was just my mind's always spinning. And that's just something that I came up with and what I love. Uh-huh.
So this makeshift grocery store, what were you selling and to whom?
I would sell anything I could find, whether it was a paperclip or an apple or whatever I could find on my grandmother's desk I was selling. And I would have Monopoly money that I would use and I would pretend there was a customer there. I would scan something on the conveyor belt. I would write down a receipt, would give them the receipt. We would exchange money. And it was my imaginary friends.
Uh-huh. And so you happen to have a creative mindset. So it sounds to me you're probably pretty effective in the accounting industry because you happen to love numbers, but you've also got the creative side, let alone you have this ability to communicate well with people. You're probably pretty effective in the accounting firm with your clients as well as with your partners. Am I reading that right?
That's correct. You absolutely have to be creative. You have to be thinking outside of the box. That's often a lot of reasons why we get clients is because of the creativity of what we do and, you know, coming up with solutions for clients. Like, that's the most important thing. Come to us with the problem. We're going to find a solution for you.
Mm-hmm. What's the website address for this organization known as Welch Maloney?
WM-CPA.com.
We've been speaking with Adrian Strassione, partner of Welch Maloney here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website. It's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. That's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. Stick around. We'll be back in a moment right after this quick break.
This is Herb Cohen, your host of Executive Leaders Radio. And if you're a business consultant, if you consult to business owners, or to business owners' team members, then we'd like to speak with you because we're getting requests from people all over the country, from entrepreneurs all over the country that are starting and building their businesses where they're looking for help. And maybe we can help connect you. Why don't you email us at consult@executiveleadersradio.com. That's consult@executiveleadersradio.com. And perhaps we can connect you to folks, to entrepreneurs and their team members all around the country that are looking for help. That's consult@executiveleadersradio.com.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, and let's get to know Marie McConnell, who's chair of Corporate Business Banking Group of Fitzpatrick, Lentz & Buba. Marie, what is Fitzpatrick, Lentz & Buba? What are you guys doing?
We are a full-service law firm, and we specialize in corporate law and commercial real estate.
Gotcha. Where you're from? How many brothers and sisters? Where are you in the pecking order?
Allentown, Pennsylvania. We're an hour north of Philadelphia, and I am the oldest of three girls.
8 to 14, what was you doing?
I was reading. I was devouring every book that I could get my hands on. I was in the library Constantly. I had a small friend group that I hung out with at school, and I had a very close cousin and sister group that I hung out with every weekend.
All righty. Chris, you want to give me a hand getting to know Marie?
Sure. Marie, you mentioned during in the green room that you were really shy as a kid, which isn't a real conducive personality trait for a corporate attorney. How have you overcome that, and how's that translated into your role today?
Sure. So I was incredibly shy as a child, and as I got older, I sort of reinvented myself, and I embraced my role as an attorney, which was a role that I knew so well. I was deliberate in everything that I do. I still am today. And to me, it's totally separate from that shy persona, which is the reality for me.
Jane?
You, as an attorney or an advocate, where does the advocacy tendencies come from?
When I was growing up, my younger sisters and my three cousins, we formed this little pack, and we were referred to as the six. And because I was the oldest, I was the leader de facto. And so I needed to advocate for the six when we were 10 years old and we wanted to do something that the parents didn't want us to do. It was my job to convince the parents to allow it.
Ethan?
Marie, in your role as in at Fitzpatrick Lentz and Bubba, I'm sure it's all about finding common ground for your clients. Can you recall a time, maybe between the ages of 8 and 14, when you first helped to find common ground?
Common ground was always coming up, as I mentioned, when I was the liaison between the six and the parents, and I was doing a lot of convincing and giving and taking, and that was a small scale, and now I'm doing it on a much larger scale.
Ryan.
So when I hear cheerleader, I don't think shy. How did that stepping out of your comfort zone shape who you are as a lawyer and a leader?
That was the first time I stepped outside my box, and I'm so glad because it showed that I could do it. And I wasn't a great cheerleader, but I had a lot of fun, and it's convinced me throughout my career that I can do whatever I need to do, and it might actually end up being fun in the process.
Natalie, did you have a question for Marie?
I do. Marie, we have a shared love of reading. I know what that has meant to me. What has it meant to you? You and who you are today.
You know what? It has meant everything. I loved books my entire life. There's not a period of time that I can remember not reading. And even today, as a new mom, I'm still devouring books. It's my escape. It's my relaxation. There is so much out there, and I just want to read it all.
Jane?
What did you get from your mom and bring to what you do today, and share with us what you're learning as a new mom that you can bring to what you're doing today?
Sure. My mom had a very, and still does, has a very serious mental illness. It made growing up with my sisters and I very different than most kids, and it was a lot of me trying to gloss over things and hide that aspect of my life, but my mom was still wonderful, and she still is. And so many of the things that drove me crazy when I was growing up, I now see that I'm doing them anyway. So despite her challenges, I really got so much from her.
You mentioned that you're a new mom. What do you what how's that affecting you nowadays? What are you learning about yourself being a new mom?
That I can juggle, that I can do so much more than I thought I could. I thought I was busy before chairing the largest practice group in my firm, participating in our executive committee. But when you add a one-year-old into that mix, it is just, you know, that there's it's juggling. That's the best word to describe it.
Ethan?
Maria, how young were you when you first started making money?
I was about 15 years old, and I got a job at the local grocery store.
What made you special about working at that grocery store?
It taught me more life lessons than anything else that I have done in my entire life. I was a bagger, I was a cashier, I worked in customer service, I ended up in the pharmacy, and I learned how to deal with people and work with people and just come to them on their level. It was wonderful.
Do you see a connection between that and what you're doing today as chair at Fitzpatrick Lentz and Bubba?
Absolutely. I think about the things that people taught me in that grocery store all the time when I am dealing with people, when I'm giving my colleagues the benefit of the doubt, when I'm trying to figure out a situation. It has direct implications, and I think it's a worthwhile experience for everybody.
You had it sounds to me like you had other folks, maybe adults, influencing you and helping tune you in when you were working at that grocery store. You were looking for input from them.
I was, because there were things that my mom wasn't able to give me with respect to those kind of life lessons dealing with people. And so the people who were surrounding me were the ones who really ended up teaching me a whole lot about interacting in the real world.
Huh. So the fact is, you naturally are attracted to outside input. And is that one of the reasons you enjoy working at this law firm? Is because you've got other professionals you can deal with and staff you can deal with, where you're tossing ideas around like you were as a kid working in that grocery store?
Absolutely. It's a collaborative experience, and I work with the best people every day. I truly wake up and I think about how lucky I am, to have the partners that I do and the colleagues that I do.
So you really appreciate working with strong people. You really appreciate getting, you don't need to be the smartest person in the room. You like working with really smart people, whether it was at the grocery store. And then also, it seems to me like you like doing a bunch of different stuff. When you were talking about working in the grocery store, you started doing one thing, but you ended up doing a whole mess of stuff. So you do like diversity. You're capable of doing a lot of different stuff. Am I reading that right?
You are. The more I know about everything in my industry and in my line of work, the better the attorney I'm going to be, and that's what I've always been doing my whole life.
So you've got this natural curiosity is what it comes down to. Is
Sure.
that true?
A curiosity with a goal to make myself better.
How long did you work in that grocery store as a kid?
From when I was about 15 years old until I went to law school at 22.
So your nature is to get involved with something and really get to know it and stick around with it deep. How long have you been involved with this law firm, Fitzpatrick Lentz and Bubba?
It was my first job out of law school. I started in 2008. I've been there ever since. I'm never going anywhere. And I truly wake up every day thinking how lucky I am to have landed here.
Why?
It's the people. The people I work with are so wonderful. The clients I work with are amazing. And I really find joy in the work that I do every day.
What do you mean you find joy in the work? What are you talking about? You find joy in work. What are you talking about?
I enjoy it. I'm solving problems for people. I have a skill set that knows how to get people from A to Z, and I can make that happen for them.
Wait a minute. It says here you're the chair of the Corporate Business Banking Group. So you're dealing with banking and you find joy with banking?
So, despite being the chair of that group, I don't do any banking. I do a whole lot of corporate work and I do a lot of commercial real estate. But even if I were doing banking, I'd find joy in that too.
So this thing about joy, where's this coming from in your childhood, finding joy? Where's that coming from in your childhood?
I like stability and the law and my practice are all about stability, and I have control over it. And that brings me joy.
Sounds to me like you really have, you've done a lot of deep introspection and you really got to know yourself. What's the website address for this organization known as Fitzpatrick Lentz and Bubba?
FLBlaw.com.
FLBlaw.com. We've been speaking with Marie McConnell, Chair of Corporate Business Banking Group at Fitzpatrick Lentz and Bubba. Ethan, could you give us a rundown on who we've had on the air today, please?
Sure, Herb. We've had a great show today. On the show, we had Natalie Kidd, Chair of BOMA, Rebecca Johnson, Executive Director of AIA Philadelphia, Adrian Stracione, Partner at Welch Maloney and Company, and Marie McConnell, Chair, Corporate Business Banking Group at Fitzpatrick, Lentz and Bubba.
I would like to thank my co-hosts, including Ethan Milrod, LiveTech, Ryan Walter, Pro CFO Partners, Chris Keith, Epic Brokers, and Jane Sobieski, Wells Fargo, for giving me a hand structuring the questions, hopefully providing our listening audience an educational and entertaining show. I'd like to thank our listening audience for listening, because otherwise we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website. It's executiveleadersradio.com. That's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. Thank you for joining us today, and have a nice day. Bye-bye.